I'm here.
Okay, we have some technical difficulties. There's no music on tonight, but happy Independence Day, brother.
Same to you, sir.
Well, let me try to see if I can get this fixed, because there is something I wanted to play. There it is. I think it's all queued up. Everybody can wait for this one. Okay, you gotta love technology.
Yeah, right.
Welcome to the BS podcast, episode number 8. I am your host, the American Redneck Buckshot Jones. In this podcast and every other podcast, like in the past, we'll be talking to independent professional wrestlers and promoters about independent professional wrestling and wrestlers and promoters about their careers. My guest tonight is a guy I met in my time in IWA, Ohio, when he was a director of authority in IWA, Ohio. What simple was that? Welcome to the show, Devin. My guest, Devin James.
Glad to be here, sir.
Well, thanks for being on here. Like I said, it's July 4th, Independence Day. If I offended anybody by playing the national anthem, I do not care. If anybody knows me, knows how I stand about this country and the flag, and knows me about my patriotism. So if you don't like it, I mean, you ain't got to listen. You can turn it off. I don't give a shit. I mean, anybody knows me, I speak my mind. I don't care. You know, that, if your feathers are ruffled, you know, you ain't got to listen. And I'll just leave it at that. So how you been holding up through this whole plandemic and all this horse shit going on with all these protesting? Let me get this out of the way right now. Protesting, I'm all for it. It's your First Amendment right. Where I draw the line is when you riot and you terrorize and you do all the bullshit that you're doing. That's where I draw the line.
I don't disagree with that.
There's no sense in destroying other people's property, their businesses, or physically harming somebody.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Like I said, you know, part of my job is to protect the property that we guard. It's my shoot job. And during that riot, I was, you know, armed to the teeth and waiting on somebody to start some stuff, because they just started, I'd have finished. So.
And the looting and all that stuff. If you're going to do that, do it in your own neighborhood. Don't go to somebody else's. Don't go to another state to terrorize other people. That's bullshit. That goes against what our protest is. and all the stuff for the, you know, Porso, you know, Mr. Floyd, that's pretty much spitting on his memory. And that's a disgrace. It was terrible what happened to that man, a piece of shit, right, racist cop, whatever. Hopefully the son of a bitch gets the lethal injection. That's the way I feel about it. He cold-blooded killed that poor man, and that's where I'll leave it at that. Now we'll get on to the podcast. Got that out of the way. Like I said, anybody knows me, I'm going to speak my mind. Fuck your feelings. So how did you get into the business of professional wrestling?
Well, I was in the business of professional wrestling when I was a teenager, and was started out at 16 years old working as a security guard for Midwest Pro Wrestling. And they were short a man one night, and I had no training and no experience. And he's like, "Can you get in the ring?" And I said, "Sure, I'll get in the ring. Who am I going up against?" And he said, "Well," he said, "we booked King Kong Bundy tonight, and we got an opponent for him." So my first opponent in pro wrestling was King Kong Bundy, and that sucked. So that's how I got started.
You're growing up, a lot of us, you know, we had our influence. Who were some of your influences, you know, as a kid growing up watching professional wrestling?
Arn Anderson. My biggest influence by far was Arn Anderson. Loved his, you know, ground and pound style he had in the ring. And, you know, the fact that he could get on a mic and gab it up with anybody. I always liked that about him.
Yeah, that's one of mine too. You know, Arn Anderson, I said this before, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Barry Windham, Ric Flair, Dr. D. David Schultz, you know, guys that didn't do the high flying, but yeah, they were ground and pound, and you know, they used their technical skills, which I'm pretty much like a brawler. Now, my age, I mean, I got to bring the fight because I ain't do none of that flippy high flying poor shit.
Yeah, you ain't never going to see me coming off top rope, just saying.
So what was that first promotion you said you worked for?
Midwest Pro Wrestling. They've been gone for 20 years or better. But yeah, that was the first promotion I worked for, ran by the Lancaster brothers out of Lancaster, Ohio. So, we did a lot of shows in, Frankfort, Ohio and little towns. It wasn't, you know, any big venues or anything like that. It was high school gyms.
Okay. On from there, where did you go?
From there, basically, you know, I started my career, and then, you know, a few years later, my first child was born, and my wife didn't like my wrestling career, so basically I gave up wrestling. Went and got a real job. That's what they told me I needed to do. I needed to get a real job, and so I went and got a real job. And but I always, you know, I stayed involved as much as possible, went to every local show I could find, and years ago went to IWA shows at what was then the Backstage Bar in Chillicothe, Ohio. That's where I first met Bull Miller. And of course to me, you know, he was larger than life at that point in time, you know, come out, you know, snarling and looking all vicious and mean and, you know, yelling at people. And, you know, to me that was huge. But as a fan at that point in time, I wasn't really a wrestler, anymore. It had been years since I had been in the ring, and, just was a spectator, pretty much how that, came about. And then I got my chance to actually get back into the wrestling business. Started out as a sponsor. Brenda and Andrew Mackin had come into my store. I owned a chain of vape stores, and they had come into my store asking for sponsorship, and we sponsored them. And we sponsored them. I guess they had one elite package or gold package, they called it, I think it was, for $150 a month. So our show, I should say, $150 a show. So we paid the 150 a show for the sponsorship, and we got to do a little bit more than what other people got to do because we paid more than other people. But so every month they were in there, and they would sit down and talk for 3 or 4 hours. And finally, they, you know, I had mentioned that I'd love to get back in the ring just one more time. And, you know, of course I'm in my 40s, you know, when this is all going on. And so they asked me, you know, I asked them if I could, you know, ever do like a special thing, like a, you know, guest referee or ring announcer or something. And Andrew would come up with a role for me. And that role was to play a special enforcer one night. So he created a character called the Hangman. And, basically it was a, kickoff of the Undertaker's all it really was, big wide brim hat and a leather coat and paint on your face, and you know, come to the ring and basically help a good guy win. So that's basically what I did. And after I did that role, they asked me if I would be the director of authority. And, you know, the rest of it, you kind of know, you know, the history there, went from director of authority. And then before too long, I was in matches again. And it's been a fun ride. It really has.
And you went from being a worker and then you became, when did you become part of creative with IWA Ohio?
Never really became part of creative. When Bull passed away, Andrew and Brenda came into the store one day and they said, "You got business knowledge and you put some money in the company already." Asked if I would like to be a partner in IWA. So I said, sure. What I need to do, how much I need to pay and stuff like that. And I said, no money. Just keep doing what you're doing, putting money into the business. So I got some lights and some foggers and stuff like that and tried to help, you know, boost the sex appeal of the show, so to speak. You know, this was when I got involved. And so at that point in time, it was in my understanding that Brenda and Andrew owned outright the IWA. Of course, you know, if you listen to my interview at the end of the IWA, you kind of know that I found out later that was not true, But at that point in time, it was a lot of fun to just be involved again and, you know, be backstage with some of the guys, which, by the way, some of the guys did not want me backstage. I mean, it was very clear that there were some of the guys that just didn't think I belonged backstage. So first couple shows, I kind of just stayed off to myself. And then eventually they warmed up to me and let me in the locker room with them. So.
Yeah, sometimes that locker room could be sacred ground. I mean, we've been doing this for 16 years now, so yeah. And I said it before, IWA is one of the best locker rooms. The first show, this one, you know, Bull was still alive, but he couldn't be able to make it to the shows, and I finally made an IWA appearance. And usually, like I said, when you're the new guy in the locker room, not too many guys want to talk to you, but this IWA, it was – totally different. I mean, as soon as I walked in, Joshua Charles, great guy, great personality, you know, great human being. I mean, he stood up, shook my hand, welcomed me to IWA, introduced himself. And of course, I did the same. And then Vince Cross introduced himself, and, you know, Paragon and Lennox Norris. And I mean, the atmosphere was great, you know, my first time, you know, in IWA.
Yeah.
Yeah, it we'll get more in IWA later. So, when did you become part of creative with IWA Ohio?
Well, when Andrew resigned, and he resigned, you know, no one fired him or pushed him out. He resigned. When Andrew resigned, basically, him and Kenny, Vince Cross, had been doing the booking, and I had received an email from – not an email, I'm sorry, a text message from Andrew telling me that was probably not a good idea to allow that to continue, and I'll just put that in short form, and it's a much longer text message than that. So, and basically telling me, you know, you're the guy, you know, you and Brenda are running the show now. You're going to have to start booking your own shows. So, sat down with Brenda. Found out that Brenda's booking ability was less than par. She liked to book people who couldn't wrestle. And so in the process of doing that, yeah, I saw that pretty quickly that she was booking friends or people she liked, but not necessarily were great wrestlers and certainly weren't great for business. And that went on for quite a while. And then, so what we did was I wrote a few shows myself, and then got Connor Cross involved in it. And Connor Cross took over the booking, and then he brought Vincent Cross back in, and they were working together to do the booking all the way up to the end of the IWA.
Yeah, and I think them two working together, you know, you know, did good. But when, you know, you got people that's also being pushed by other people other than, you know, yourself and maybe, you know, Vincent and Connor, you start butting heads and have different points of view and, you know, tug of war within management.
Well,
you start having problems with that.
One of the things about pushing people, and this is one of the things I believe about pushing someone, if you're going to push someone, it should be, first off, someone who's got experience. And second off, you don't push somebody who you're dating, who you're friends with. That just looks like it's bad, you know? So.
So what was your some of your best times in wrestling, and what were some of your worst?
I met some great guys, you know. It was in IWA that I met, you know, guys like you. I met, you know, some of the same guys you did, you know, Joshua Charles, Vincent Cross, Kyle Castle. I met these guys and, you know, became friends with them and eventually won their trust. So that was a lot of fun. But, you know, probably the most fun that I've had has been just being in the mix, you know, in there with these guys and, you know, getting to play a character and be a character, be somebody that, you know, is outside of my normal person, you know. That's a lot of fun for me, you know. I always was big into the I don't want to call it role play, it's not what it really is, but, you know, playing a part. I always was, you know, into acting and things like that, which wrestling, you know, I mean, I think the kayfabe's kind of gone from wrestling, you know. As much as I hate to say it, everybody kind of knows that, you know, it's scripted out. So basically, you know, you get to play that role, you get to play that character, either make the fans love you, make the fans hate you. It really doesn't matter because you're still doing the same job. So.
Right. So what was your, like when you first came in IWA, Ohio, what was it like when you first came in towards the end?
When I first came in?
Yeah, when you first came in to do a role, you know, to, other than, you know, financial support, what was it like at that point in time until towards the end?
After Bull passed away, it was chaos. We were playing in gyms that had, you know, there were 100, 100, 300, 400, 5 degree gyms, no locker room to dress in, and playing for crowds of 8 to 10 people. That was, you know, he's doing Westfall and Williamsport, and also doing New Holland. And New Holland was a little bit better of a crowd, but still, you know, very tiny place to be. I don't know, just there was a lot of chaos, a lot of things that were done. In my opinion, it was kind of shoddy, but the guys were great, you know? And so you got to be in that situation with these guys and knew that they had your back if you tried to pull it out. And I think that's what gave me some hope that we could save it. I just wasn't Bull Miller, you know?
Right. Yeah, you know, Bull had every intention of coming back before his passing, because I chat with him on, you know, Messenger and all that, and but just a few days before he passed, he swore me down. He was gonna make a show, and he swore me down. I was going to get a chop. sadly, that you know, that never came to be. In your time in the business, is there any championships you've held?
I'm currently holding one. The only one I've ever held. I'm the current hardcore champion.
That's with the third version of the RPW, right?
Yes, third version of RPW. But I want to stipulate the third version of RPW has nothing to do with version one or version two.
Well, you know, a lot of people, that's how they separate them, you know, because, and we'll get to this next question here, because version two, you know, was a shit fest. You know, I had time there. Yes, I had the opportunity to be their heavyweight champion on four different times, but it got to the point where, you know, you got to say enough's enough. And
right.
You know, just like, you know, like me, which you already know, we had to talk when I took the leave of IWA. You know, I just got tired of the locker room drama and all that. And, you know, I had other personal issues going on with my marriage, and that's a whole different story. So, with talking about RPW 2.0, what are your – this has been a trend on the podcast. So, what are your personal thoughts on Vinny Violence?
Vinny is – okay. personal thoughts – yeah, I've noticed it has seemed to be a trend. Personal thoughts on Vinny Violence. Vinny is a friend, okay? Let me start by saying that. But I'm friends with Mike Rogers. I'm not friends necessarily with Vinny Violence, okay? So he's a personal friend. His kids call me uncle. My kids call him uncle. But Vinny needs to retrain. That's the best way I can say it. He was doing better for a hot minute, and then he got him mixed up with a whole another set of circumstances, and for God's sake, it just seemed like he just went straight downhill from there, you know. So I told him, I said, you know, recently I said, you've gotten a bad name. You need to start over. You need to retrain, and you need to change your gimmick, because quite frankly, where you're at now with what you got, you're not going to go anywhere, you know? I don't think you like hearing it, but it is what I told him, so.
Now, speaking of RPW, how did that, your version of RPW, how did that come about?
Okay, so this is why I say it has nothing to do with version 1 and version 2. The original name of the new company was Evolution Pro Wrestling. Okay, we had letterheads already made up said Evolution Pro Wrestling. We had banners already made up said Evolution Pro Wrestling. That's Evolution with an E, not an R. And we had not done all of our homework, I guess, and found out that there was another company using the exact same name and the exact same logo. So once we found that out, or I guess they found out that we were using theirs, they sent us a cease and desist letter. Okay. So all this money has already been paid out. And I had, two guys, backstage come to me. I'll tell you who they were. One of them was Vinny Violence and the other one was, Matt Awesome. Both came to me and told me, so look, we got belts that you can use that say Revolution Pro Wrestling. If you just want to add an R to it and make it Revolution Pro Wrestling. No one told me at that point in time that there had been two other iterations of Revolution Pro Wrestling.
Right. And Revolution Pro Wrestling was brainchild of Joe Black.
So I have something to find out.
We had pretty good sized crowds. You know, I mean, Joe had help with JT Storm, and both had, you know, good business sense. And JT did take business in college. So they do pretty well, but it got to the point where, you know, summertime was coming and, you know, kids were doing their thing and families were doing their family thing. So crowds kind of dropped. So it got to be a financial burden, and he handed it over to Vinny Violence. And Joe took a 6-year step away from the business. And it was all right at the beginning when he ran it, but it just got to the point where, you know, favoritism and putting titles on guys, just put it on them. This guy's, it was their birthday, and there's shenanigans like that. That's going to kill a business. And
oh yeah, yeah,
kill
definitely.
Locker room, you know, morale, and all right. Now a little bit more controversy. There's two sides of every story.
Sure.
Now, Vincent Cross, he, you know, me and him had, I still think we can have a hot program.
Again, agreed.
RPW, and, you know, because that night we, you know, you heard it too, me and him had, you know, the loudest thing during our match, you know, because everybody knows the story with Vincent Cross and Buckshot Jones.
Right.
he didn't want to work a match, a rematch for the RPW title. But then he got a hold of me and said he was fired. I had him on here. I think he was my second guest on this podcast, and we talked about it. And here's your opportunity to give your version of it.
Well, real simple. I never fired him. Matter of fact, as far as I know, and he and I have talked in the last 2 weeks, as far as I know, he still works at RPW. The only thing I did with him was take him out of the match because I needed a spot filled in that match to replace another guy who was supposed to be in that match. If you remember right, Tommy Blaine was supposed to be in that match.
Right.
And he could not make the show. Now, COVID ended up canceling the show. So because of the COVID virus, we haven't had a show since December, which sucks. But
absolutely.
But, you know, COVID ended up canceling the show, so it became a moot point. There was, you know, there's nothing to – he didn't miss nothing. Nothing was out of the ordinary. I got a phone call from the locker room leader at that point in time, Kyle Castle. And he said, what do you want me to do? I said, go get the belt because we're going to need it for the title match. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And – according to Vincent Cross, which I have no reason to say yes or no, I wasn't in the conversation, but according to Vincent Cross, he was told by Guile that he was fired. I never fired the man. And I think if he's honest, he'll tell you I never fired him, you know?
Right. So whose final call is that? Would that be,
mine.
So you could override that firing?
Already did. Already told him. You still got a job here if you want it, you know? So.
Good.
That was just 2 weeks ago on the phone with, well, I'm sorry, not even on the phone. It was on Facebook Messenger with Vincent Cross.
Jeez. I think maybe still can run a good program, you know, for the fans' point of view, because not to toot my own horn, the fans do like me. You know, at least somebody likes Buckshot John, but. You know, and they don't like Vincent Cross because he's crazy.
Well, that's the whole point, though. You know, if they don't like Vincent Cross, he's doing his job, I guess.
Yeah, and he stole my belt.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad we got that out of the way, and hopefully we can get Vincent Cross back in an RPW ring so I can get retribution on his crazy ass.
Well, he told me he was going to call me the next day. He never called me the next day. So I had David Wright get a hold of him because David and him are good friends. And David hasn't gotten back with me since then either. So I don't know what's going on right now. So
hopefully we can get all that settled. And, you know, Vince and I like working each other. And, you know,
Vincent Cross is a great promo guy. He's one of the best I've ever met at promos.
And hopefully he wins that promo tournament.
He did not.
I think he can.
He come in, I think, eighth.
Ah, so it's over?
It's over, but he come in like eighth. But, damn, man, he ran the gauntlet. He started with 64 people in there, and he come in eighth.
That's not bad.
No. Honestly, the guy who put him out, I think there was some favoritism there because his promo was much better than the other guys. So.
Yeah, I've been trying to keep, you know, voting on that. My daughter playing softball now, my regular job, I'm working overtime, and you know, it's just kind of hard, you know, softball practices and softball games, and you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, take time out to do anything because,
sure,
of course, if it's for my daughter, I'm going to do it. I mean, she will always come first. And
Vincent was worried that he – I guess he did an interview recently on another podcast along with Andrew Mackin. And I got to listen to the podcast and I heard him say on the podcast, you know, I hope Caleb's not offended by this, you know, and stuff like that. I'm not offended by somebody having a different opinion than me. Okay.
Right.
So I was not at all, you know, offended with what Vincent Cross had to say. Some of the stuff that went on at the end of IWA was horrible. Okay. Some of the matches that were put on were terrible. There was some serious doubt on storylines and everything else that should not have been pushed. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And even I had my doubts on them. But being the, and I kept getting told this on a regular basis, being the junior partner, it was just go along to get along. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, because the way I understood it, and this is the way it was made to be understood, is that Brenda owned 55% of the company. Okay. And I owned 25% and Tim owned 20%. So basically that was the way it was told to me. And then I come to find out that, well, you can't own anything that somebody else already owns. So.
Right. Okay. From the promoter side of it, what workers do you like working with?
Okay. That's a loaded question because there's a lot of guys I like working with that aren't even in our promotion. Some of the guys that I love working with, I love working with Vincent Cross. I love working with you. I love working with Guile Castle, although Guile has retired for the 19th time recently. He'll come back again. We all know that. But I love working with guys like that. Joshua Charles and I always had good rapport with each other. A strange one, I'm going to say, that I always enjoyed working with. My daughter can't stand him, but I like working with Brandon Ashworth.
I'm being Brandon Idol.
Yeah. I've always liked working with him. Some of the guys that I didn't like working with, I didn't like working with Rob Johnson. I don't like working with people who are arrogant, and I found him to be arrogant. So, there was others that I could, you know, go on a list, but the biggest problem I had wasn't, you know, who I liked working with or who I didn't like working with, because quite frankly, I can tolerate anybody as long as they can work the ring, you know?
Right.
Some of the guys that I really liked working with couldn't work a ring, and some of the guys I really hated could. And so I did a lot of, you know, going along to get along there. But when you don't have the ability to be liked by the people who you're working with and you can't work a ring, you might as well just get out of the business, you know? And there were a few people that came along that were like that. And some of these people had been bigger stars. You know, I worked with a couple of guys that had made it on bigger promotions, and I don't know how in the world they made it.
Now, from the wrestler side of it, working in the ring, who do you like working with? And who will you refuse to work with?
I'm different than a lot of guys. I won't refuse to work with anybody, because even somebody who is less than par, if you work them right, you can make them look good. You know what I'm saying? But I don't refuse to work with anybody. There are a few people I'd like to see get more training before I work with them. So on that end, no, there's nobody that I refuse to work with. The guys I really like working with, and I've had an opportunity to work with a few. I have good matches with Matt Awesome. Now, I get told all the time, it looks like I'm beating up on an anorexic cancer patient, but I have good matches with him. So I like working Matt. I am perfectly okay with working guys like Derek Flint. Thought he was phenomenal to work with. I didn't have a problem working Kodiak, but I couldn't get him to do anything. You know, basically he was taking a lot of bumps, but he wasn't giving any, you know? So.
Well, with Kodiak, the potential was there, and I've told him this. I think on the bad side of things with him, he had the wrong people whispering in his ear, and that kind of took a lot away from the potential that he has, that he still has.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, though, he's still listening to the wrong people.
He's been working out with JT Storm and Joe Black and Christian Steele and Chris Hex and guys like that, which, you know, if he continues to do that, then he will get back to where he was before he had that devil on his shoulder.
Well, the problem with that is, though, don't get me wrong, don't, yeah, and please understand what I'm saying. Have I been blocked by both him and Brenda? Yeah, I don't care. But I still like Timmy. I still like Kodiak. And my biggest problem is, and this is where I say, no matter who's training him, you know, he's going to fail because he's listening to a certain individual that we all know knows how to screw up a show. That's Jay Miller.
There you go. There is anybody you'd like to work with, promoter-wise, wrestler-wise, that you haven't worked with before?
Yes. And I didn't get to let me finish that and say that I did have one moment in my wrestling career that I worked with somebody who, as a child, I had looked at as a person to emulate, and, you know, somebody I wanted to be like and somebody I enjoyed watching wrestle. And he was, back then, he was Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which was still in territories back then when I was a kid. But I had that opportunity and got to work Tracy Smothers. That was fun. I enjoyed that. And even though he couldn't wrestle that night because Tracy's not well, we got to do a lot of battling back and forth on the mic, and it was a lot of fun for me, you know?
Right. You know, our prayers and thoughts from the BSJ podcast and from all his fans and everybody that knows Tracy, our prayers are with you, brother. You know, continue the fight, and hopefully one day you can get back in the ring and do what you do best, keep on kicking ass and kick cancer's ass and send it packing.
That's exactly it.
What are the future plans for Devin James?
Future plans for Devin James. Well, Devin James is about to be 48 years old. So, you know, future plans are more in the past than they are the future. But I'm going to continue to wrestle a little bit, probably not every show. I'm going to continue to promote. I've learned a lot. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've learned a lot from the mistakes I've made, but I've also learned a lot from other people who kind of guided me a little bit and, you know, talked to me about things and tried to help me do a better job with stuff. So, unfortunately, RPW only got to do one show before the coronavirus took us out for the time being. But you were part of that show, so you know that that was a much better quality show than what IWA had had.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
I spend a lot of time talking on a daily basis to guys from other promotions, and I'm not going to do what other companies have done. I'm not going to book a bunch of big names just to get draw. I'm going to book a lot of good talent from different promotions from all across the country, and I'm going to bring them in, and I'm going to do some things that have never been done before. But the main thing I'm going to continue to do is push young, talented guys to the top. That's what I want to do. So one of the things that we did as RPW, we hired a production crew, Hot Tag Promotions. They run our promotions. They run our productions for us. They're not cheap, but they do a good job for us. And they get our name out there. Plus, they're a big inroad to a lot of things because one of their people also works for Ohio Valley Wrestling. So that being said, Ohio Valley Wrestling is getting ready to do some things in the Central Ohio area, and we're going to get the opportunity to push some of our guys into OVW. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's pretty huge news right there.
Yeah, it is. So, and that was all brokered by Hot Tag, you know? So if you own a wrestling promotion and you're looking for somebody to actually, you know, promote you well, that's the company to go with. Hot Tag Promotions, you know, it's, like I said, not cheap, but they do a great job. And Rick Vickery is also our ring announcer, and, you know, he's phenomenal on a mic. So that's what he does for OVW as well. He's a part-time ring announcer.
And don't they also do the backstage interviews for RPW?
Yes, they do. The backstage interviews, they do. He's our announcer. He's our backstage interview guy. Once we get the recordings and stuff done, he's going to be doing a lot of commentary on there for us. There's just a lot of things that they do for us, and they also do our video work and stuff like that, photos. They took over our fan pages, our Facebook pages, Instagram, stuff like that. They have brokered about $1,000 a show worth of sponsors, which is a good thing. That helps a lot. And believe it or not, the sponsorships they brought in actually cover their cost plus some. So,
Well, that's a good thing. Okay, what do you think? When did you think started the downfall of IWAI, and what do you think was the final nail in the coffin?
final nail in the coffin for me, hussy. Okay, in order to answer that question, I have to go back a little bit and say what started the downfall to me was when Andrew walked away. Now, don't get me wrong, Andrew Mackin and I do not have good history with each other, okay? But the one thing I can say about Andrew is he actually knew how to write a show, okay? And when he
Totally
walked
agree.
away, I'm sorry.
I totally agree.
When he walked away, that gave a person that I actually had a lot of respect for at one point in time the opportunity to show me her true colors. And the three things I learned about that was that, number one, she couldn't book. Number two, she didn't know what she was doing. Number three, she could be a bitch. And so, am I allowed to say that on your show? I'm sorry. So,
Yes, there's no rating on it. You can say whatever the fuck you want.
okay. So, learning those three things, I begin to see a trend towards, okay, we had a good guy, a face, baby face, Kodiak. And Brenda was the manager of a faction, the Asylum. And somebody, in their infinite wisdom, took pictures of Brenda and Kodiak out to dinner together and posted them on Facebook. And so, in order to fix that, we had to flip one or the other of them. And so we ended up having to flip Kodiak, and that's the night I got the pool cue broke across my back. From that point on, the IWA just seemed like the Brendan and Kodiak show. No matter what anybody did, they were out there four or five, six times a night. And it just became all about them. But the final nail in the coffin for me was once that all started happening, I became pretty disenfranchised. I didn't really even want to be there. I was at a point where I was so frustrated and so pissed with everything that was going on that, because, Buckshot, I'd put about 20,000 in this company to try to save it,
Right.
and just watching my money just get flushed down the drain. And it had been made basically my life savings that I had pulled out to try to make this company go. And at one point in time, I even brought in a camera crew at $1,200 a show to bring in a camera crew, and she pissed them off so bad they left. So they didn't even record the show. They left, and because she didn't want them there, so that was all that mattered, So I began to do some investigation, and in my investigation, I made some phone calls, and some of the phone calls I made were to now deceased Mark Bryant.
God rest his soul.
I don't know if you're familiar with Mark or not,
Yeah.
and I asked Mark, I said, I'm the outside looking in on this, but I'm getting accused of a lot of things, surrounding who owns the IWA and stuff like that. And so I need some truth. And Mark said, okay. He said, where do you want to meet at? I said, dude, I said, honestly, I can't, because of my job, I can't get down to where you're at. Any chance you could come to where I'm at? He said, sure. He came right to the park, which is right down the street from my house. Sat down with me, and he slid a paper across the table there, and he said, this is the last will and testament of Bo Miller. And it was then I realized that the Mackins didn't own the IWA. They didn't own the ring. They didn't own any of it. And so I asked him, I said, okay, I said, I'm trying to be above board with this. I've got a lot of money invested in that ring. I wouldn't have had it fixed. You know, did put a lot of money into it. I put $1,100 just in the ring alone, just to have it fixed. And then I put another $800 worth of set of new ropes on it, which you know from RPW that we put another 1,000 into it since then, you know?
Right.
So I said, I'm trying to be above board. I said, I'm not going to argue with the will. I'm going to tell you, you know, how do we resolve this? Because there was, you know, lawyers were involved. They were sending letters to Brenda. Brenda was bringing these letters to me. And, you know, so I asked him, I said, how do we resolve this? And he said, well, he said, let me go talk to Connie Baker and I'll bring you an answer to that. So about 2 weeks later, he messages me and says, Connie says that if you give her back the belts and give her $500, she'll sign off on everything and you can have the ring. It's yours. I said, okay, that's fair enough. So I went and collected all the old belts and took them to Cincinnati myself. Put them right in Mark Bryan's hands at the Motel 8 in Cincinnati, right there by Kings Island. He met me there. I put the belts right in his hand and I handed him $500. And he handed me a bill of sale from Connie Baker. Since then, Connie and I have talked. The first couple times we talked, she gave me a tongue lashing and a good cussing, and then she realized I wasn't the bad guy. So we started talking, and we've actually become, I wouldn't say friends, but we're at least cordial with each other. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So Connie was still pretty upset about everything that had gone on, and even though she'd signed the bill of sale, she didn't like having to do that. But I didn't like having to, you know, think about the prospect of losing, you know, $2,000 worth of equipment because somebody lied to me. So in the process, once I found this out, I bought the ring. And August of last year, I announced, I didn't ask Brenda anything. I announced that IWA was having its last show. And the reason I did that is because while I did not own the rights to the name IWA, I now own the ring. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to let this mockery of what IWA had once been continue. So I met with Brenda in Lancaster. She said, I want the ring. And I said, you can want one hand, shit in the other, and see which one fills up the quickest. You're not getting the ring. She said, well, I want the IWA then. I said, you have the IWA. I said, but you're going to wrestle in a sandbox because you ain't getting the ring. So she agreed to it. Didn't even show up for the last IWA show. And that's the night that we announced that we were launching RPW. And in the process of making that announcement, we took, I believe, 4 months to get RPW up off the ground and running. So, sorry, the dog's barking in the background. I apologize.
It's okay. They might be barking here pretty soon. I just sent them out. And yeah, they were sending out fireworks because City of Cambridge.
That's what they're doing here, and that's what's got her triggered. But
the City of Cambridge ain't doing the fireworks, so people are doing around.
That's what they're doing here in Columbus. So long and short of it is, you know, the day that ended the IWA was not a single event. It was a bunch of stuff that led up to it. But what's the final nail in the coffin was finding out that the company had been stolen, you know?
Right.
Now I did listen to that podcast, and can I comment on that?
Yes.
Okay. I did listen to the podcast with, I believe it was a Venetia's podcast, with Andrew Mackin and Vincent Cross. And I will stipulate that in that podcast, Andrew said him and I used to be friends, and that is true. We did used to be friends. We stopped being friends when I found out what happened to the GoFundMe money that was supposed to go for Bull's funeral. And to this day, Evan's funeral home is still sending me letters saying that his funeral has not been paid for. So that being what, you know, said, Now, Andrew claims that I accused him of being a thief. Well, he's right. I did. And I still stand by that. If you're going to steal something, you're a thief, you know? I will stand by that till the day I die. I'm not saying Brenda's innocent in it. Heck, she might have been the one that spent the money. Maybe she told him about it later, but they were married. They were in it together, you know? As far as him being pushed out of the IWA, that was a bullshit lie. He didn't get pushed out of the IWA. He quit. I've got text message that I could send to anybody that he sent me telling me he quit. I kept it because I knew this day would come. And as far as his defense of, you know, not saying that, you know, Kenny was, you know, not trust Kenny as a booker, I've got that in text message too. So, matter of fact, if I remember right, did I not send you a copy of these text messages at one point in time, sir?
I think so.
Yeah. So, more than one person has seen these text messages. So that's all I'm going to say about that. But, you know, Andrew Mack can go on a million podcasts and tell a million stories, and they're all going to be not the truth.
Okay, any advice you got for these young guys and gals? Or just now yeah. coming into the business, or would like to come into the business?
Several pieces of advice. First off, if you would like to come into the business, let me start there. If you would like to come into the business and you can't set aside time to train, you can't set aside time to practice, you can't set aside time to work out, don't come into the business. That's a bad idea. You're going to get hurt. That's the first piece of advice that I would give. Second piece is if you're willing to put all that time in, because it does take a lot of time. If you're willing to put the time in and you're willing to make the effort to go to training, to work out, to, you know, practice in times that you're not in training, get in the ring and do dark matches, whatever it is you got to do in order to get better. You're willing to put that time in. RPW is a place for you. We will welcome you with open arms as long as you're willing to put the time in. This place is about building young stars. As far as, you know, advice for young guys that are in the business, maybe they're just cutting their teeth. They've been here, you know, a year or less or 2 years or less. Listen to the veterans. The veterans know what they're talking about, and don't get a chip on your shoulder when someone tries to show you how to properly do a move that they see you're not doing right. Because these guys have been around. They know what they're doing. There's a reason they've been around as long as they have. And when you come into the business greener than corn husks and, you know, walk around like you own the place, you know, those guys in the back are going to – they're going to get the shits of you. And when that happens, you're going to feel it in the ring, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah, so take your creative criticism.
Exactly. And learn, for God's sake, and this is a big one, learn how to do a proper promo. 90% of the people in this business today do not know how to do a promo and do not know how to own their character. What I mean by owning your character, if you're a heel, your job is to make the face look good. Why in the world are heels out there trying to sign autographs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I had the same problem when RPW 2.0 tried to turn me heel, which it backfired. I was still getting cheered. I was getting the face of the boot. I still had fans come to me for an autograph, but I still, you know, kept the cage from, you know, get away from me. I don't, you know, I mean, I tried to play it, but it was hard for me to do. You know, I started off with the heel, I turned face, and once I turned face, it was on. Try to turn me heel again and backfire.
Yeah. You're not a guy who could easily be turned heel. But, you know, I was taught early on in the business, back in my early 20s and late teens, I was taught, and I'm not going to mention who trained me because it's irrelevant now. The guy's dead. But I was taught that if you're working as a heel, Your job is to let the baby face chase you so much that no matter who, and make the crowd hate you so much that it doesn't matter if they brought a brand new guy right out of the locker room, never had a match before, the crowd's going to cheer him because they hate you. And so in the very few times I've worked heel, because I'm not a good heel, but in the very few times I've worked heel in my career, I've tried my best to make the crowd hate my guts. Some guys that are really good at that, Vincent Cross.
Definitely.
He can make a crowd hate him. Some guys that are really not good at that and have tried to run that role, Vinny Violence. He's not good at making a crowd hate him. They don't care, you know.
Right.
So
another one I like to add in, I've said this before. I don't care if you're a veteran, I don't care, especially if you're like you say, green room cornhusk. You come to set up that ring, get help set up that ring. Because if you are green, it gives time for the veterans who are willing to teach you 99.9% of the time in the indies, work with you for free.
Right.
Take the free training from these guys that are willing to do it. Guys like Connor Cross, guys like Vincent Cross, you know, guys like Brandon Skinner, you know, take their advice. Work with them.
Scotty Amos. Show
you the right path to go on. That's what I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, those guys
tearing it down. You know, the sooner you can get that tore down and get everybody out the building, the better it'd be for the promoter. And you know, when you don't do that, and the guys that are staying to do that, that are veterans, and some of the new guys, and you think you're a superstar, you ain't got to do it. That's just going to hurt you with your relationships in the locker room.
Yes, it is. And I'll tell you something else too. A lot of promoters, if guys won't stay to tear down, they'll book them again because you know, there are some venues you rent by the hour. And if you're past a certain time getting out of there, they charge you more money. So
there you go.
We were in a venue not too long ago where we got charged an extra $125 because we stayed to clean up. So
did some good, still got charged for it.
Yep. That was why we got charged. We stayed an extra hour to clean up and got charged $125 for cleaning up.
Wow.
I told him the next time I'll just leave the mess for you then, you know?
Right.
But yeah, that's the best advice I have for anybody is, you know, take those moments where you can catch even one pointer from somebody. We got guys in RPW that are coming back with us next show. Some of the people that are already, you know, given a positive confirmation that they will be there. People like Scotty Amos are coming back.
Dominant worker.
Absolutely. I'm trying to get Joshua Charles back. I know that IWA was not friendly to Joshua Charles, and he deserves a lot better than he got. You may not know this name, but female worker Max the Impaler.
Yeah, I don't think I heard of him.
Her. Max the Impaler. Yep, she was the OVW Women's Champion for quite a while. She's coming into workforce. We're building up our women's division in RPW. The women's division is going to come in strong. I think I've got about 6 or 8 women on board for the women's division. So there's a lot of things getting ready to happen for RPW. As soon as, you know, state gives us the go-ahead that we can run shows again. I know there are some shows going on. Let me just stipulate this while I'm on here with you. I know there's some shows going on that are claiming that they are sanctioned by the state. According to the president of the Ohio Athletic Commission, those shows are not sanctioned by the state. Now, if it's a private show where they're not open to a regular audience or for a club or something like that, you can do those shows. But you cannot do shows where you're selling tickets right now. So.
Did the OAC give a timeline?
They're supposed to have another announcement on July the 19th. I'm hoping for something more positive than the what they gave on July on June the 9th. But on June the 9th, the timeline they gave was October. So,
hopefully we can get things rolling here soon. I know I'm going to be part of the DFC show, which will be at that MC Clubhouse, which is a private club. So,
right, that's why that one is legal, because you can run private clubs. But people who are, you know, renting venues and or putting up a ring in a field and charging tickets, they're running illegal shows, you know.
Well, you'll see, we'll catch on that. And trust me, Marty will catch you. He's a bulldog. And you think you can get away with it? Marty does find out one way or another. It may take him a couple months to find out you did it, but Marty will catch you.
Yeah, he will. And, The current president, Bernie Profato.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Bernie. Yeah, Bernie. The current president, he don't like wrestling anyway, so he's not, you know, he's definitely got he's got a burr under the saddle for wrestlers anyway, so he'll go to shows that are legal and try to find out if you got permits and insurance, stuff like that, which we do, by the way. RPW does have permits and insurance and a license. We are legal to run our shows. So, but a lot of shows are not. And I'll be honest with you, the last few shows of the IWA weren't legal shows. There was no permit. So
that last show I worked, that was an illegal show?
That was an illegal show, sir.
Wonderful.
Yep. I was told there was a permit purchased. It never showed up.
Lovely.
I'm sorry.
I'd like to thank you again for taking the time, even though it took us an extra day and some time working through the technical difficulties, but we got through it.
We did.
I'm glad to get you on here on Independence Day 2020. 2020, the year of chaos. Hopefully, next few months everything will get better.
2020 can pretty well kiss my ass at this point in time, but hopefully the new year will be better for us. So,
I'm hoping. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time being on here. Once again, happy Independence Day.
Same to you, sir.
And if things continue to keep on going where they're going, we might have Independence Day 2.0. But we shall see.
Yes, sir.
Everybody that follows me on my regular social media on Facebook knows my thoughts on Dictator DeWine, but you know, maybe
yes,
one of these days I'll have an episode on here just about politics. But
well, I'd love to join you on it when you do.
That's what I like to have on here. Even though me and him are, you know, outside of wrestling, me and him are good friends, I like to have Vince Across on here because our political views are totally, it's night and day.
Oh, yes, I know.
But
his political views are pretty well FUBAR as far as I'm concerned, but he probably thinks mine are too.
Yeah,
so.
He does the same, but with he and I, we don't let take it personal. We
right.
We know it's our First Amendment right. We do debate about it. We keep it clean. I don't get mad at him. He don't get mad at me. We have our differences, and we leave it at that. You know, but we both love wrestling, and we're good friends, and we keep it that way.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes our friendship special.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, you don't have to hate somebody just because you disagree with them, you know?
Absolutely. Okay, once again, happy Independence Day to you. Happy Independence Day to the listeners. For Devin James, I'm the American Redneck Buckshot Joes. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.
Good night.